je pouvais rester ainsi quelques moments de plus.
Si je pouvais vivre, n'était pas aussi proche. J'offrais
mon amour.
La femme que tu aimes ne serait pas assez dans la
That's an excerpt from the new Metropolitan Opera production of L'Amour de Loin by Kaya Sarriaho. I'm Naomi Lewin with Corey Ellison, who wears a lot of hats in the opera world, including staff dramaturg at Glyndebourne, teaching at Juilliard, helping develop new work through American Lyric Theater, and writing supertitles. She created the English translation of L'Amour de Loin for the Met titles that are available at every seat in the house. We are in Corey's apartment, so you may hear a little bit of traffic in the background. Corey, you have spent a lot of time with this opera, which is clearly not your Verdi boom chink chink here's an aria kind of piece.
No, but I've lived with this piece for a very long time. As a matter of fact, I first met Kaya Sarriaho when this piece was still sort of a twinkle in her eye, 1998, on my first trip to Finland. I was writing an article for the New York Times about the Sibelius Academy, which is Finland's main music conservatory. And it so happened that Kaya that year was teaching there as a visiting professor, though she has lived in Paris since really the early 1980s. And we spent a morning, really a whole morning, speaking. It was supposed to have been a half-hour interview, but we kind of bonded. And among the things she talked about was this new opera that she was writing and how it was going to be very different from, you know, many people's preconceptions of opera.
What were her influences?
For a long time, she felt that she really couldn't write an opera. And she was basing her impression of opera on rather stodgy performances of standard repertory that she'd seen while she was growing up in Finland. And her thought was, well, I don't see myself being able to write that sort of a piece. But it wasn't until the 1990s when she saw Peter Sellars' production of Saint-François d'Assise, Saint Francis of Assisi, by Messiaen. And she was bowled over by Peter's production, but also by this opera, because it was like no opera that she had ever seen or heard. It was far less linear. It had a very expansive pace and so on. And she said to herself at that time, if that's an opera, then I can write an opera.
It's interesting that you say that, because the first composer who came to mind when I heard and saw this piece was Messiaen.
Of course, yeah, there's such a great influence. And of course, her musical style has been very influenced by IRCOM, the Center for Electronic Music that was established by Pierre Boulez, at which she studied in the 80s and at which she met her husband, Jean-Baptiste Barrière, who is also a composer and a visual artist. So that was a big influence on her, so-called spectral music.
Mm-hmm.
which really takes apart electronically the components of sound, and it analyzes it in a very scientific way. But the way that Kaya has always applied that sort of scientific analysis is in a very poetic, imaginative way. So her music really does stand on its own. That was an influence too. Also, people are always talking about Debussy being an influence on her. Certainly, one sees similarities in various plot elements and the treatment of the orchestra and so on in L'Amour de Loin that would put you in mind of Pélléas. And also her great countryman, Sibelius, who is an influence on every single Finnish composer, whether it's they're following Sibelius or reacting against him. He is the wonderful elephant in the room among Finnish composers, but also the force that caused Finland to really get behind music, for the government to really decide to fund music and musicians so well, which of course is one of the reasons for Kaya's stature today.
There are only three characters in this opera.
Yes, there's Geoffrey Roudel, the historically based character, who is a troubadour who falls in love from afar, hence L'Amour de Loin, with Clémence, the Countess of Tripoli. And the third character is the pilgrim, who is kind of the go-between between Geoffrey and Clémence. But there's also very much a character is the chorus, which is so splendidly sung in this production by the Metropolitan Opera Chorus under Donald Palumbo's aegis. And the chorus has several functions. They are characters, first of all. The male chorus are the companions of Geoffrey, who are usually sort of advising him and berating him and kind of making fun of him. And then same thing with the female chorus, which plays a similar role with the character of Clémence. Also, though, Kaya uses them in a really fascinating way as part of the orchestra, really. Sometimes they sing wordlessly, or even just on a word that kind of gets abstracted by the length of it. And literally, she uses them as another orchestral color. You know, there's even historical precedent in Bellini's Norma. He does that, for instance, in the famous aria Casta Diva. There's a part where the chorus really has no other function other than to add sonority to the texture, and Kaya uses them like that.
And the famous humming chorus.
And the famous, well, the humming chorus, of course.
Madame Butterfly.
Absolutely. But Kaya uses the chorus very masterfully.
L'Amour de Loin got a lot of attention as the first opera composed by a woman to be performed at the Met in 113 years. The only other opera by a woman to be performed, the one 113 years ago, was Der Wald, The Forest, by Ethel Smythe. Why do you think it took so long?
You know, that's a simple question with not a very simple answer, I think. First and foremost, it's the history of the Western world, which is that women have always struggled for equality with men, certainly in the sphere of work. And music has been no different than any other profession. The thing about opera is that it's kind of risen and fallen on strong heroines. So for most of its history, the male creators of opera were sort of stuck with women as singers. And as a matter of fact, in a lot of ways, the prima donnas have been the most bankable elements of opera. So that's quite ironic, because the opera repertory is made up of such a palette of incredibly strong female characters, most of which were written by male composers. So it was simply that the training and the opportunity for such a long time was just not there for women. the handful of female composers, you know, throughout history were either nuns, so they were allowed to do this, people like Hildegard von Bingen, or they were attached to some male artists in their family, like Francesca Caccini, who was really probably the first female opera composer way back at the real inception of opera in Florence at the turn of the 17th century. Her father was Giulio Caccini, who wrote one of the very first operas, and so on. You know, Clara Schumann with Robert Schumann, and Fanny Mendelssohn with Felix Mendelssohn. So those female composers that have come down to us have really had some sort of a connection, which is why they got any training or experience at all. And because of that, I think it's taken us until really the 20th century for women to just begin to have the education and the opportunities to develop into composers on the level that male composers have been. There have been many wonderful female composers by now outside of the operatic sphere, but Kaya is really, you might say, the first female composer who's written work of the stature that can stand beside the works of Mozart and Verdi and Wagner that are being done at places like the Met. So hopefully there are many more after her. I know there are a number of wonderful younger female operatic composers right now who are coming up.
I think immediately of Missy Mazzoli, who's breaking the waves, has really made waves recently.
Yes, absolutely. I had the great pleasure of serving as a dramaturg on that project. She's a tremendously gifted opera composer. And again, one who at some point never thought that she necessarily would write opera. Of course, there's also Jennifer Higdon, who's written Cold Mountain, commissioned by Santa Fe and done more recently in Philadelphia. There's Paola Prestini, whose opera Gilgamesh I also served as dramaturg on. There's this young composer, the newest composer in Opera Philadelphia's composer in residence program, Renee Orth, who has recently finished at Curtis and written her first opera. There's Ellen Reed, and so on and so on. Justine Chen, who has a project in development for American Lyric Theater right now. So hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more women's work at the Met and elsewhere.
It seems a little crazy that we're still putting women composers into a separate category, and Kaya Saariaho agrees.
That has always been my attitude, that I feel that we should speak about my music and not of me being a woman. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, I hope there are some other reasons for doing it.
But I guess composers' gender is still an issue because women continue to face hurdles in that field.
I've seen it with young women who are battling with same things I was battling like 35 years ago. So I think maybe we then should speak about it, even if it seems so unbelievable. It needs to change. It just has to change. You know, half of the humanity has something to say also.
Absolutely. She said it very well. Well, my first thought when the Met officially announced that L'Amour de Loin was going to take the stage, the headline in the Times was something like, first opera by a woman composer at the Met in 113 years. And I remember I posted something on Facebook saying something to the effect of, well, the headline should really be, great opera premiered 17 years ago, finally makes it to the Metropolitan Opera. And no, you know, nothing about it being by a woman. I think part of the battle is to get to that point. And, you know, with all these younger women composers coming up, we will someday reach that point where we don't have to qualify it as an opera by a woman, but just a great opera. We've come a very, very long way since Amy Beach and other people earlier in the 20th century. But, I mean, I know Kaya has told stories about the fact that when she was studying composition in Helsinki, that there was a teacher on the Sibelius Academy staff who refused to teach her because she was a woman. And she finally did study with Paavo Heinonen, who was a really great, very modernist composer. He was her first major teacher, but she had to go through that. She also tells stories about showing up to performances of her own pieces where she was mistaken for the page turner.
Leanne Curtis, the founder and president of Women's Philharmonic Advocacy, said Sarajevo actually would have preferred that the Met do her second opera, Adriana Mater, which is much more political. And also an opera that is really connected with something only a woman can experience, motherhood.
Adriana Mater, I know that it does make Kaya a little sad that L'Amour du Roi has had such a wonderful trajectory in the world. This Met production is the 10th production, but Adriana Mater, which was her second opera,
It's a tougher nut to crack,
absolutely. It's about war and violence and rape and anger and all of that kind of thing. And so the subject matter doesn't go down nearly as easily. And of course, the music that clothes it perhaps doesn't go down as easily because it reflects the subject matter. So perhaps it never will be quite as popular, but I think it's a very good opera and should be heard. And then there's also her third opera, which is quite small. It's a one-woman opera called Emilie, which was written for Karita Mattila, the great Finnish soprano, and it was done in the Spoleto Festival a couple of years ago by the wonderful American soprano Elizabeth Futrell. And Kaya is now working on another opera project, which is not, you know, it's sort of in the quiet phase now, but she is working on something.
Susanna Melki has gotten rave reviews for conducting Kaya Sarajevo's opera, and this was Melki's Met debut too, which makes her the fourth woman to conduct at the Met.
I mean, we can acknowledge this and raise our eyebrows, but at the same time, I think we can celebrate and turn a page and not to dwell on how terrible it has been. And there are, I mean, there are lots of different reasons for this. And times are changing now.
It definitely feels like female conductors are starting to come into their own. Shen Zheng just took over at the New Jersey Symphony. Of course, Marin Alsop has been on the horizon for a long time. Mirga Grazineta Tila is music director of the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. Gemma New in Hamilton, Ontario, and I could go on. Do you think it's been harder or easier for women as conductors than composers?
Well, it's, you know, I think in certain ways, perhaps even more difficult for female conductors. And that's because professional orchestras have for, you know, very, very long time been sort of male bastions. They've tended to be run by men and they've tended to be populated mostly by men. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody to say that I think it's not easy for a woman to stand up in front of a group of men and for them to take orders from her. A lot of men, perhaps not even realizing it consciously, don't like that. And I think that's been a real barrier. Petrenko who said that, you know, it's distracting when a woman stands in front of an orchestra because she's too attractive or something like that, which is so stupid. Anyway, we all know that that's not a viable argument, and that, like women composers, female conductors now have been receiving training and more opportunities. There's, of course, that wonderful program in Dallas, a workshop for female conductors. And hopefully orchestras of the world are more receptive to both guest conductors and music directors. Of course, Susanna herself has just become the music director of the Helsinki Philharmonic.
Are there other jobs in opera where you think women are underrepresented?
Oh, absolutely. I think general directors and artistic directors, the heads of opera companies, which also has been a real good old boys club for most of its history. And I think we're just beginning to crack that now. You know, Francesco Zambello in Washington and Glimmer Glass, Esther Nelson in Boston, Deborah Sandler in Kansas City are among ones that come to mind, Catherine Smith in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's great that they're real pioneers, and they've also, many of them have banded together and established at Opera America a women's leadership conference, which meets every year at their national conferences and has a Facebook page and meets regularly among themselves to just advance the cause of women in leadership roles in opera.
Tell me about your experience as a woman in the world of opera.
Well, my own experience of being a woman in opera, it's probably a double-edged sword, because for my work as a dramaturg, it involves a lot of teamwork. Well, opera in general is teamwork. But for instance, if you're working on a creative team developing a new opera, or working with a creative team developing a production of an opera in the repertory, there are certain skills like listening and nurturing and so on and so forth, which are traditionally female, although certainly there are men out there who have these qualities. But there's a certain, you know, I don't know if you want to say non-threatening sort of nurturing aspect to most feminine personalities that allows you to be effective in those kinds of situations. On the other hand, you know, it's the Hillary Clinton phenomenon. When you need to really assert yourself for some reason professionally, all of a sudden you're a bitch. You know, you're doing or saying the same thing that a male colleague might be doing or saying, but somehow. So that has certainly happened. It certainly happened to me that, you know, a dramaturg is paid to be the best informed person in the room, to be able to support everyone else. And sometimes people find that threatening, strangely enough.
How long do you think it will take before we can stop asking the woman question?
Well, how long? I hope not long. I do feel that the progress has been very, very long in coming and slow. But I sort of have a sense that in the last decade or two, the floodgates have really begun to open and progress is just happening much more quickly than it has in the past. I think that's true with a lot of things. You know, there's been civil rights, gay rights. I would love to say that within the next decade that we won't be talking about female composers and female conductors or dramaturgs or general directors. I just hope it will be taken in stride, just as female singers are in opera.
Thank you very much, Corey Ellison. Thanks to Jeff London for the use of material from his interviews with Kaya Sarriaho and Susanna Melki, and to the Metropolitan Opera for audio from the production of L'Amour de Loin, featuring soprano Susanna Phillips, mezzo-soprano Tamara Mumford, and bass baritone Eric Owens. For Women's Philharmonic Advocacy, I'm Naomi Lewin.